Well. Welcome to a new episode of the magnificent, the marvelous Low Violet. This is a podcast where I host interviews with authors, poets, and publishers and presses. Today on the show, I'm talking to Lake Markham. He is the author of Lo Siento. He's going on a book tour soon. And let me look up those little details for you right quick while you listen to my little intro. Here we go. Events on October 21st, 2025. He's going to be in Asheville, North Carolina. October 25th, he'll be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Reading with Graham Irvin. October 29th, 2025, he'll be in Austin, Texas. Reading with August Smith and Stephanie. November 1st, he'll be in Chicago. November 8th, he'll be in Portland, Oregon. If you want the finer details, go to lakemarkham.net. Yeah, this was an excellent interview. He came on. We did just like an intro, you know, not a lot of book talk. Great talk. We talk about Austin. We talk about Paul. We talk about him living in Japan. We talk about his music career. So the whole thing, I did a special episode. I put it up on YouTube. But, you know, people, they want the audio. So, you know, I'll give them what they want. Give the people what they want. Okay, guys. I'm out. Talk to you guys later. Bye. So how did you... When did you live in Japan, you said?
Yeah, I grew up in Japan, so I...
You grew up in Japan?
Yeah, more or less. So,
that's like, insane.
Kind of wild, yeah. So I grew up until...
Where were you born?
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
And I grew up until I was 13 or 14 on a cattle farm in Kentucky. And then at that age, I moved to Kobe, Japan. My parents, my dad and my stepmom, were sort of like manufacturing engineers, and they were together on like a project to make all the iPhone glass in the world. So they are based out of this little tiny factory in middle of nowhere, Kentucky, which is where the iPhone glass is manufactured. They moved over there to Japan to be centrally located, like China, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan. There were plants, and so they would scale the operation or whatever. So yeah, I was there from 13 or 14 all the way until I was 18.
Dang.
And I went to like a European school.
Do you have like friends that you still talk to from there?
Yeah, I was texting with one of my buddies today, actually. I'm still in like a group chat with a bunch of the guys from my grade in high school. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I talk to some people here and there. I have a buddy who lives in Edinburgh, and he just kind of does music. His dad wrote Slumdog Millionaire, the book.
Wow.
So it's like this really strange just collision of sort of random people in my life. But the ones who have stuck around, I'm still really good friends with.
Do they have a football team?
So I've never gone to a school that had a football team or football games or anything. No.
Wait, for real? And you're like, you're from the South? That's crazy.
Yeah, man. So yeah, in high school we had baseball. We had soccer was our big sport.
That makes sense.
And then we would play, you know, other international schools, or we would play Japanese teams for like pickup games and stuff. In my junior or senior year of high school, some of our New Zealand friends petitioned to put together a rugby team. So we had a rugby team at least for that year.
Oh, cool.
But then, yeah, when I graduated, I ended up moving to Nashville for college, and I went to school there. And
I have a question about the culture of Japan.
Yeah, for sure.
Is pro wrestling big over there?
I would not be, I think, the right authority to speak to that, but I will say I never went to a wrestling match or anything like that.
Okay. I know that it's big within wrestling circles, and it's like, it's treated like a real sport, I guess. Like they sit and clap. They don't like stand up and cheer.
Yeah, I would believe that. So baseball was very popular.
Yeah, that's like huge over there.
Yeah, and Hanshin Tigers were our team, and like there was a lot of hype around that. I would imagine very similar for wrestling. But to your point about like sitting down in the chairs, mm-hmm. one time in high school, my dad took me to see Eric Clapton and Steve Winwood in Osaka.
Yeah.
And like, you know, they were just playing super loud, of course, and everybody was sitting down in their chairs, just kind of politely clapping. It was like really like I'm here, you know.
So take me through a day of your life over there.
Yeah, I mean, it was my teenage years, right? So it's been like almost two decades, but
you're doing drugs?
No, I wasn't doing drugs. I would get up and I would walk about a mile to my high school.
Damn.
And I would go to school, English speaking curriculum. It was European IB, which is sort of like Europe's AP or something. Very like progressive school, nonprofit, very invested in the arts. But yeah, I would go to like English class, math class. I took this really cool class on, I guess, like audio video production. And I, there was a studio, like our school had a studio, and I would hang out in there. I'd go to PE. In circus unit, we had like, or in PE, we had circus unit or lacrosse unit or futsal. We had a cricket unit one time. But yeah, I went to class. I'd kind of get done with class. I'd go home. I'd read or listen to music or play music or whatever for a couple hours. So my parents got home, we'd eat dinner. Hang out with the friends. We'd go into Osaka on the weekends. I would play music sometimes at a bar in Osaka with my friend whose dad ran the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So would make like weekend money that way.
Did you have any, were there any bullies?
I wouldn't say so. No, my class size was really small. It was about 42 people.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody knew each other really well.
Were you the popular kid?
I was not. I wasn't a popular kid. But yeah, no, I mean, even if, you know, there were like groups, like I had my group, mm-hmm. but nobody, like if you went and sat at the other lunch table, like it was fine, you know.
I had a question. If you see like another white person, you're like, oh, you're white.
On the street, like outside of school, yes, for sure. It would be really funny. And I, so yeah, you'd be walking down the street and you, you know, make eye contact and it's like, oh shoot, what do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I lived on a small man-made island called Roko Island. And if I would see a foreigner there, then it was usually only a matter of time before I met them in some manner. So like, at, you know, school or at an event or at some kind of function or when the parents would get together for happy hour, whatever it might be. So
did you get any like hate from that where everyone's pretty cool?
Everybody's pretty cool. I mean, even like middle age, and this was so long ago too, like 2008 through 2012-ish.
Wow.
I feel like, you know, that was the Obama
time. Yeah.
I think globally things were a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, there would be like an older person who, you know, understandably might not be super friendly.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like, especially if I was coming through back from Osaka with like my guitar on my back, you know, like heading home after playing, like people would get excited and they'd ask if I liked the Beatles or Elvis or whatever. And yeah, people were pretty friendly as a general rule.
So do you have a girlfriend or anything over there?
Yeah, I had a girlfriend in high school. Yeah.
How many?
I think there was really just one, to be honest with you. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of a loner, man, in high school. I mean, I had my friends, right?
Yeah.
I really used to just listen to music for fun, and I would hang out with like other artsy friends who were kind of interested in thinking about the same things. That is the person I was texting with today. We used to just spend time walking and looking at stuff and like talk about how we experience space together, especially on this man-made island, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the same friend that I would play with in Osaka, like at the bar.
So did you have a band?
I did have a band in junior year and senior year, and we would play some stuff. It was me on, I would play acoustic guitar, and I loved Bob Dylan, so I had like a harmonica, you know. And then I had, I was able to work with the band director who gave me like a bunch of junk drums, and we like put together a little tiny, you know, like portable drum kit.
Yeah.
And there was a bass player. And so we would kind of just do, you know, like folk rock here and there. Cafes on the street once or twice.
So were you writing at this time?
I was writing music.
Okay.
I wasn't writing. I mean, I did write. I was always writing, you know what I mean? But I don't think I pursued it in the same sort of way that I do now. I like wrote Tumblr stuff.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people that come on here, they come from the Tumblr days. It's interesting, though, that you grow up in Japan, but you write a book that's like a Western.
Yeah, and I think it's like, so, I mean, yeah, it's funny because I had to, I think all my life I have sort of like tried to reconcile the sort of differences, right? Because like cattle farming in Kentucky to like the fifth most populous city in Japan, I believe. And it's like, that's so distinct. But I'll tell you what was even weirder was like coming back from Japan specifically to go, like I went to Nashville, but before Nashville, I worked in rural Kentucky at a factory for that summer before college started. And I think that was really the really strange part. But when I was in Japan, so when I got introduced to like, you know, because I was listening to Bob Dylan and stuff when I was 14, 15. But then I found like Wilco, and it was like this blend of like, avant-garde, or like not avant-garde, but like sound and noise, you know, ambient kind of stuff, like on Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, but also like so distinctly Americana, like Country Fried Radiohead, you know. And so yeah, I think that I found this way of synthesizing like American, Western, whatever, with, because, and I think that's the interesting thing too about the Western, the Western in general is like, especially the spaghetti Westerns, you know, they're so infused with sort of like European sensibilities and, I don't know, like not quite kitschy modernism, but you know, that Art Deco kind of thing. And so yeah. I think that like, I really like Americana Western stuff, country music when it's sort of elevated in that way or whatever, you know, can get conceptual.
So what's your favorite Western?
That's a really good question. I think, for a few dollars more, maybe, like the big ones. My favorite movie of all time is Once Upon a Time in the West.
Okay, I don't watch a lot of Westerns.
I don't. Yeah, it's funny. I didn't, and then I did.
Yeah.
Know?
Maybe like, it's like more adult thing because they're a bit slower. I don't know.
They are definitely slower. They burn a little slower. Once Upon a Time in the West, particularly, because it's such a long movie, and there's so many like slow-burning side quests that all kind of come together.
So wait, is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a reference to that, then?
I think so.
I guess so.
It's like Once Upon a Time in the West is like a staple, like, spaghetti Western.
Mm-hmm.
But the same director went on to do... I think it's called Once Upon a Time in America, and it's a gangster film set in New York, and I think it was like made in the 80s. I'm not as comfortable with that one. But I think that like, yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood must be. I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I've thought the same thing.
Have you seen the movie? It's called like Bring Me the Head of Someone.
I have not.
Okay. I think it's like a Western, but it's set in like Mexico, but it's not in the West. It's like a city, but it's pretty violent. It's pretty crazy.
Interesting. It sounds.
Yeah.
One thing I do like about Westerns is that they do open up, like, because it's essentially just a template, right?
And would so, you write one?
Would I write a Western?
Yeah, based off your book.
Like a movie? Yeah. I mean, maybe. Yeah, it could be fun. I don't know. I like the vision of West Texas. Like, visually.
Do you prefer novel?
What's that?
You prefer novels?
Yeah, I've never really written movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not.
What about a music video?
Music video could be cool.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on this track that'll probably never get released because I haven't done music since I was like 25 or something. You know.
So wait, you came back from Japan. You do Nashville. When do you start the band and everything?
So, yeah, that's a good question. So I'd never really stopped playing music. I stopped for a little while because I got to Nashville. Okay. Mumford & Sons is very popular in America. And I was coming from Japan. My friends were really listening to a lot of like just straight pop music. They were really into things like Avicii and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And independently sort of, you know, I'm very aware of, I sound a little bit different, you know what I mean? I've got this accent. So I was listening to like, yeah, Wilco, Bob Dylan, kind of getting into Radiohead a little bit, stuff like that. And then I moved to Nashville, yeah, and everybody's listening to like Mumford & Sons and The Head and the Heart and stuff that doesn't really stick with me. And so I felt very alien in a different kind of way because it's like, this is not my thing. So I stopped playing music for a little while. And I would still like noodle or like jam a little bit with friends. But I think Pineapple Tours, which was my band that I told you about.
So when does that start up?
That was probably 19, 20.
When do you go from like just playing around to like, okay, I'm going to take it serious now. I'm going to have a band name. And like, how do you like, what's the schedule that you start? Do you like sit down and like schedule things out?
Yeah, I mean, that EP that I sent you, that was all just me in my bedroom. And that was specifically when I was working in a factory. I was reading a lot of like Adorno and Herbert Marcuse's, so like Marxist influenced stuff. And I was like, okay, my art that I really feel that I know the best is music. And I want to like sort of make something that's like aware of the production quality that it has, you know? And I think I spent that summer just sort of like recording, like playing songs, writing songs, trying things out that I could like play into the microphone and like mess with. Because it's the same time that I was listening to Vaporwave. So like, yeah, 2013 or something. And
I went on SoundCloud and it had like hashtag lo-fi like for every track.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was back in the day. Yeah, I mean, that was what I was doing. I wanted to make like lo-fi rock or like vapor rock or something.
That's really in the moment, though. Like, that's when it just like was starting out, I feel like.
Yeah, it was doing it. And then, yeah, and sometimes I feel bad being like, yeah, I got into Macintosh Plus in like 2013, 2014, and somebody will be like, oh, man, that's after it was already, you know, it popped off. I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. I don't know. To me, it felt new and different and cool, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was it was fun. I still felt very... The world felt like a different place then, you know, especially.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So how far did you go? Like, when do you stop? And it's like, do you feel like your dream died or anything, or you got burnt out?
That's a good question. No. So I put out that first thing and then I started playing live with a band sort of accidentally. But it happened. It worked out. It was some of my friends. What we really liked about it was like none of us were, I went to a music school, right? And none of us were like the big music guys on campus, but of course we all played music. And
wait,
so,
are there big music guys in a music school?
Yeah, I mean, it was, right, like it was the early 20-teens, so I feel like there were definitely people posting all the time about their new EP on Facebook or Instagram or whatever.
Do any of those people go on to like be in like successful bands?
Yeah, I know a number of people that I went to college with who are definitely, you know, like doing it for a living. And if not in the performance side, then in the writing side or in the production side.
Okay.
But to answer your question, yeah, I kind of started playing with this band. I ended up putting things on pause, moved to Texas for a while, moved back to Nashville. We started playing again, but it kind of just naturally fizzled out. You know, I feel like we lost that momentum.
Does the music school have a football team?
The music school does not have a football team either, no.
That'd be funny.
Yeah, never been to a football game.
What's the extracurricular for, like, a music school?
That's a good question. I mean, we had, like, lots of practice rooms and stuff around campus, so we were all just there trying to play music, you know, meet people, try and pop off in our different ways.
Does anyone go and just not play ever? And, like, they're kind of like, you look down on them?
I don't know. I mean, at the time, right, in the head of like an 18, 19-year-old artist, I'm sure there was some. But yeah, no, so my school is called Belmont University. It was in Nashville. It's a top 5 music school. I think it has one of the first or second best music business programs in the country.
What is that?
Right, exactly. I think they like to keep it that way. But it's just like bachelor's of business administration for the music industry. I don't know. But anyway, so it's like, well, no, but then the other things that it does well are there's a big nursing program, and then there's a big just general business school. So I think that there were definitely, you know, some of those people on campus for sure. You know.
Any like nurse rock bands?
Nurse rock?
Yeah.
That'd be really funny. One of the craziest things that ever happened to me in that school was I went to the nursing program for like some kind of extra credit thing. I was like,
wait, the music school has a nursing program?
Yeah, the music school has a nursing program. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I sat
Why?
For extra credit in the. I don't know. Nashville's like a big healthcare town, I know.
But like, why would, if you're going to a music school specifically for music, why do they have a nursing? That's odd.
Yeah, I don't make the decisions, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like, does anyone like go there and then they find out they want to be a nurse and they just go to that program?
I would imagine so, man. I know that I made all kinds of changes and stuff when I was, you know, college age.
True.
Good I point. Changed my major so many times. I went in to study music business. That's how they got me. And then after maybe half a semester, I changed to like accounting or something dumb. And then
so they
I
just had like normal degrees.
Yeah, they just had perfectly normal degrees. I was really good friends with the guy who studied. He was a double major in, I think it was like applied mathematics and economics. And he just got his PhD. Yeah, so like normal degrees, music school. It was just a general liberal arts college that specialized in music, I think. So
okay, so it's not specifically just music, and then
it wasn't like a conservatory.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
No.
Okay, so when does the Pineapple Tours start? I guess we already went into that.
Yeah, 1920.
Okay, so when does it end?
Yeah, it ends pretty much like I moved back from Texas and we played around a lot. I was bartending at that point. I made a little bit more music, played a little bit more, and just kind of organically people started, you know, getting jobs or getting married, moving away, and that was the end of that.
Did you hate when they got married?
No.
Or can it end soon?
No, I mean, I could feel the writing on the wall, but... I don't know. I was already at that point I was no longer as interested in making music, you know.
So when do you become a photographer?
That one was, I was always pretty interested in photography. I think like in high school, I really wanted to get into photography and I wasn't allowed to have an iPhone. I had a shitty Japanese flip phone, you know, and with like a charm on it.
But I thought your parents made the glass for the iPhone.
Man, again, I don't make the decisions.
They did? And they really? That's crazy.
Yeah, but anyway, so I guess...
What do they have against iPhones?
I don't know. I think they were too expensive.
Okay. They don't get a deal? They don't get a discount? That's fucked up, dude.
Well, I was a first child, too. I wasn't allowed to watch SpongeBob. I wasn't allowed to have an iPhone. I wasn't... Now my brother and sister, you know, are allowed to do all of it.
Well, hey, you have your own fucking novel, so it probably worked out for that.
That's true. Yeah. Just that pin-up rage. That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got into photography when I moved back. I got an iPhone, and I was like, ooh, this is something I can play with a little bit. And then I got a camera, and, you know, started to think about things as like a photographer might, you know, bought photo books and read a little bit. Yeah.
So would you just go out with your camera and, like, take pictures and stuff?
Pretty much, man. Yeah, that's exactly what I do.
Does that feel alien at first?
It's different, and it forces now. And it's different now too, right? Because like somebody at that age today, you know, is surrounded by people who are taking photos all the time, and they're taking photos. And
but it's not like a professional camera and stuff.
Yeah, I know, but that's a good point. That's a good point. It's all photography, though, you know, in some sense, a photograph's a photograph. But yeah, no, it felt alien at that time, at that age, I think. I met some friends through it, and we would go around and shoot and just sort of walk for, you know, an hour, two, 3 hours and just talk. And that was a really fun way to get to know somebody. really fun way too to understand how do they look at things when they're thinking about taking a picture. Or I really miss being that age in some way where there was all this freedom and you could just meet people and spend that kind of time on something like that, getting to know them in a more intimate way, you know.
Did you collaborate a lot in that way?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, I think, like, I would spend time with people and we would take pictures together and sort of exchange photos. And, you know, then you never know, you get invited to a party and meet other people or find out two people are friends that you like. And then it starts, a scene or whatever.
Did you sell any of your photos or did you make any zines?
I've made photo zines more recently. Yeah, at the time I thought about selling, I had a friend who sold video game companies for like textures and backgrounds.
He sold textures to video game companies?
Yeah, he would take photos, really textured sort of background photos, and sell them to video game developers.
That's badass.
Yeah, it was cool. It was something I always wanted to do, but there was like, I would say when I moved to Texas until I was about 25, so from 22 till 25, 26, I was not really thinking about any of this stuff, art, music. That was just sort of like a pause. I took a pause.
Did you ever consider painting?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to paint. I think painting would be so fun, but, you know, there's only so much time. It's so hard to get good at one thing.
Yeah, did you ever, like, when do you ever get into something and then, like, back out?
Yeah, plenty of times, I'd say. I don't know.
Any significant times that like led to like a life lesson that you can give an anecdote of?
I think, yeah. I mean, probably the biggest life lesson for me was when I was doing, you know, music was going fairly well in Nashville before I moved to Texas. If I'd stuck around and kept playing the strengths and kept meeting people and things like that, there was something in my head that I needed to go, you know, somewhere where I knew no one. And, when you're just building momentum, that doesn't help, you know? And so sort of went to Texas, Austin, with a girl I was dating at the time. We ran out of money in Austin. That's the only reason why we, you know, settled. And I knew a couple people. But yeah, I just, you know, had a really hard time replicating any of the same sort of music scene or community or, you know, because I hadn't lived there for 5 years.
And it takes a while to build a community, too.
It really does, yeah. And I was too stubborn or too young or whatever to sort of think about that before I made the move, really irrationally. But yeah, I think, and then I moved back home, and about a year later things kind of fall apart, and you know, it never was the same. Oh, just this and that, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, I wrote a book about it called Lo Siento.
Okay.
That it's kind of about that. No, I don't know. I went through, that was an unlucky chapter in my life that I also kind of didn't, I set myself up for failure in a lot of ways.
What do you mean?
Well, I moved into an RV with the girl I was dating at the time. So we lived in this RV. I got a dishwasher job in downtown Austin and just was kind of like partying too much. And
you're partying? Oh, cool.
I was partying too much. I was, it was kind of crazy, man. Like the bar was not doing well. And so they would go through weeks where they couldn't pay us. They would pay us with like free booze and stuff. And
So
just like living that kind of life.
Were you hungover a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot.
What do you mean a lot? How many days?
At that time, man, I don't know, probably most of the time, I would say. I was sort of living on a different kind of clock at that point. But yeah, Texas was a low point. So anyway, I moved back to Nashville.
Wait, was there a point where you're like, I have to get out of here, I have to be sober?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There was a time when I tried to clean up when I was there, and I never got into trouble, thank goodness, you know, knock on wood, all that.
Did you ever drive drunk?
No.
No? Oh.
No, I was pretty good about that.
Oh.
But anyway, long story short, I needed to move back, and I didn't know how I was going to be able to do it, and the bar couldn't pay me, and I didn't have any money, and it ended up working out. I just saved and clinched and stuff and got through it. But yeah, I would never do something like that again.
Would you ever drive buzzed?
I don't own a car. I ride the train.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you ever get a license?
Yeah, I had a car for a while. I got my so I grew up taking the train in Japan. I got my driver's license when I was 20, I think, 21. Mm-hmm. And so I drove a car. I drove a car a lot. Actually, you were talking, I was listening to your podcast with Stephanie. Mm-hmm. And you made some comment about driving up to Tulsa from Dallas, listening to like the new version of Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of time like driving at night, those, you know, Tennessee to Texas trips, listening to Coast to Coast with Art Bell, like just the strangest stuff, you know, cigarette out the window. Yeah, that occupied a lot of my time, I'd say, between that pause I told you about between like 23 and 25. I'd say I spent most of it just driving and smoking and listening to the radio.
What was your drink of choice?
That's a good question, man. It depended on what kind of spot I was at. I really liked Lone Star and a Shot. And if I was at a nice place, I really liked the Sazerac, which is a New Orleans cocktail. Toward the end of it, I started getting to wine. I was going to get my sommelier in 2020 because it was coming through Nashville. And so I had a friend who was a somm. And I changed jobs. I started working at a wine bar in Nashville to learn from like the sommelier, you know, manager. So I spent about 3 or 4 months studying, and then everything shut down with COVID.
Oh, shit. When you're working at like washing dishes, are you getting like grime and shit all over you?
Yeah, man. I mean, it really stank. You'd get soaking wet. When I first showed up, I remember there was this dude who had to show me how to wash dishes, and he wore like a trash bag bib kind of thing.
Are you like talking and stuff while you're doing it, or do you like focus on the dishwashing?
Dishwashing was it was kind of the chillest job I've ever had in a way, because you kind of just plug in, put in your music. I'm not like pot smoker, just doesn't agree with me, but like, yeah, people get stoned and like plug in the music and, you know, and it was pretty much that chill. Yeah. The only part that sucked was like if you had to run dishes out to the floor, you know, take out the headphones, like be on your best behavior. But I saw when I was in Austin, when I was washing dishes, I went to see a comedian, and like it was, you know, one comedian at a bar or whatever, and they were telling jokes with a bunch of other people that night, you know, line up. And there was a guy talking about training someone to wash dishes at like TGI Fridays, and he said that you know, finally the job on when he was training got so bad enough that this guy he was training like just broke down and screamed, and the guy telling the joke was like, that's how I knew his training was complete. And that's very much what it felt like, you know. Yeah, it was every day was sort of chill, but it was like, man, is this really just sort of what I'm doing, you know what I mean?
They gotta break you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So while you're doing the RV stuff, are you writing? Are you aspiring? Like, when's the breaking point for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was in what do you mean the breaking point?
From the RV that you have to move.
Yeah, so I actually got kicked out by the I don't know if he was a sheriff, but somebody was calling and making complaints. And my girlfriend at the time, my ex-girlfriend, she moved out of the RV, so it was just like me living in this RV that we had lived in together alone, which was like the most depressing version of living in a place that you live with a partner, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think there was this guy named Brian who was some sort of officer, and he came over 2 or 3 times, and finally the third time he kicked me out.
What do they complain about?
I guess the neighborhood just wasn't zoned for an RV, so I moved into this house, and I rented a room in this house that we had found on Craigslist. We had just enough money, you know, for 1 month's rent, And so we book it. I'm dropping my girlfriend off at Dallas so she can fly back and get her stuff. And she was going to drive and meet me in Austin. And we find this spot on Craigslist. I reach out to the guy. Hey, I've got $600 right now between us. You know, month one, we just need a place to sleep tonight. And he was like, don't you even want to look at it? And I was like, I don't have an option, you know. So drive down, stay in that room for a month. And then he gets an RV in the back. And he says, hey, if you can paint the house, I'll get and move to the RV. I'll give you the first month off the RV free. And we're so broke. It was just like, yeah, we'll paint the house. We'll move to the RV. And yeah, eventually, I guess someone was complaining because we were living back there. It wasn't zoned appropriately. But also, like, this landlord, I ended up having to pay him for the month that I got kicked out anyway, which really sucked. The whole thing, you know. I wasn't doing myself a whole lot of favors at that point in my life. But I moved down to South Austin with this, like, recently divorced man who had this massive dog and, like, 8 cats, and he had this little parakeet, you know, and I'd be in bed at, like, 1 or 2 p.m., like, from the night before at work or whatever, and the bird would be screaming, and then he would come home from work and scream at the bird, and I was like, I'm going to go insane.
How'd you meet him?
I met him on Craigslist, too. That time, I lived with him for about 3 months. That was a marked change, I would say, in my life. And it was very hopeful for me. My car broke down and he helped me fix it. He was dating someone who just passed away last year, I saw. But they were older, you know, and she was a very nice woman. And they would take me to this open mic spot, just like a little dive bar where, like, older middle-aged folks are playing songs that they'd written. Maybe they just started songwriting. But I would say until this all kind of happened, I was a lot more, you know, I'd just come from this liberal arts school where everybody was sort of an Instagram musician. You know, I had a much different outlook on art.
Yeah.
And I had studied sort of, one of my majors was philosophy, and I was really into, like, conceptual art. But I think meeting these two people, living with them and, like, the animals, having just gone through, like, one of the most difficult times of my life at that point, and going out and seeing these sort of older people just learn, teach themselves how to write songs and how to engage with art, was really, really, like, inspiring and sort of refreshing. And it came at a time that I think I needed it, that if something else had come, that had not been a positive influence like that, it could have been very bad. You know
what
I
mean? Did you ever give them notes on their playing?
No, I mean, we were all just sort of there to, you know, would say if I really liked something, I'd tell somebody that.
On your first day meeting him, what was that like?
On the one hand, I knew I had to be out of the RV, you know, so I didn't have the luxury of time. But I had met a lot of strange people on Craigslist, and I met him, and his place smelled like, you know, he had a big dog and 7 cats and a bird, you know, and it was like a strange, but at the same time, I could tell it was pretty peaceful and probably a good place to lay low for a little while and figure some stuff out. And so he gave me a tour, and he took me in, and yeah, the rest is sort of history, you know.
Have you had any bad experiences meeting people over Craigslist?
Yeah, I would never do it again.
Why not? All your experiences are good.
Most of my experiences are good. I ended up doing sort of similar thing in Nashville when I moved back, and it got me on my feet. I would say, you know, I would not be against it in any way. I mean, we were talking earlier about the world is just such a different place, so you never know what's on the other side. So I'd be probably more skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, even then, though, I was running into a lot of, like, fraudulent Craigslist postings, like, we're going on vacation for 3 months and need somebody to stay here, this is how much you pay us, this is where it is, like, even posting fake pictures. That was something I ran into a lot.
Did you ever, like, fall for those?
I think at first I was interested, but when they started asking for money, like, I think, you know, I had sense enough not to do that. I think the strangest probably experience I ever had was It was like a little suburb north of Austin, and it was a polycule, and they were like, we're very poly, and I was like, yeah, that's fine, you know, whatever. But I went, and like the door that they brought me through was like almost built into like underground, and so they brought me in, and like it was very dungeon feeling, and it was a very like a Reddit kind of dude sitting on this couch, and like the women were like feeding him grapes. And I was like underground, and I'd gone through this tunnel to get, and I was like, what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? And so that was probably the weirdest.
Wait, what happened after that, after you run into that guy?
You know, kind of took a tour of the spot. Okay. And, yeah, I was like, oh yeah, it's very nice, I'll think about it. And it was a very long drive back to Austin. And I sent them an email, I think, or something. Was like, hey, thanks for showing me. You know, I don't think this is quite what I'm looking for. Just enough stuff didn't line up.
It feels like you've lived a Western.
Well, that's kind of what... So my car broke down, and I remember, like, I was sitting at the bar with my buddy Steve, and the guy who I told you sold photos to video games. I'd met him on a trip to New York. He hit me up on the internet one time, was like, do you want to go do a photo shoot in New York? I was like, yeah, sure. I was thinking about going to New York anyway. Just randomly rented an Airbnb with this dude. Would never do that now. I was 21. We ended up becoming like best friends. But anyway, things really go to hell in Texas. And
do you wish you had that like naivete still?
Yeah, I mean, I do and I don't. You know, it very... I got to live all kinds of crazy stories and crazy things, but...
Do you ever think your life will ever get that crazy again?
You know, I think that's something that I've given up with age. I like things to be a little bit lower key now. I had to learn how to like, you know, exercise and biking and taking care of myself. But yeah, anyway... just we were sitting at the bar one day in Texas, and he was like, oh man, it's like you've been through a Western since you moved here. And that's where the idea came from. Anyway.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Oh, badass. And so you get the idea, and then you start writing it right away?
I had worked on, so I know I sent you the PDF. Have you gotten the chance to read any of it?
I skimmed a little bit.
Okay, no worries. But
there's a bridge and there's a serif.
Yeah. There are lots of different characters. I think I started writing one of the characters there, but I mainly like just needed to focus on getting sort of things straightened out. So I did that, and then yeah, I like a couple of years later, I picked up what I had started and started putting it together. But I don't think at any point I was like, okay, now I'm going to write a book, you know?
I saw one of your first pieces that was like on Jake Magazine.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
So how do you find them? How do you find this community of people?
The Jake Magazine, like the online lit folks?
Well, I guess if you were following Emma, you must have some semblance of a community.
Yeah, so I told you for a little while in college, you know, I would work in this factory. And for a while, for a couple of years, I would go back over summer, work in the factory. But there was a town called Lexington, Kentucky, and when I would get paid, I would go to Lexington. It was about 45 minutes away from my parents' house, and they had this really sick independent bookstore called Squeshel Media, and I remember just, because I was interested in, like, Schopenhauer and, like, Kierkegaard and, like, Kafka, you know what I mean, like, very 19th century sorts of, but I'll never forget, I walked into this store one day, and I saw on the bottom shelf, Richard Yates by Tao Lin, in just like that incredibly evocative cover. And I was like looking through the back, they had a lot of Tao Lin stuff, but that one just stuck with me. So I bought that, I bought Taipei, but I took the Richard Yates into the factory some, and I would read it, you know, on breaks and at lunch and stuff. And I'll never forget, you know, one time I was going through the lunch line and I stuck it down to pay for my meal. And the lady behind the counter's eyes got huge, and she was like, what is that? But, anyway, so I found Tao Lin, and then I found the whole, like, Twitter alt-lit scene, and I found Austin Islam. I found...
When?
What's that?
When did you find Austin?
I found him right around the same time. I think, I don't know, it was just this community that all of a sudden, like, I thought it was so cool. Like, you know, all these people that I'm reading are dead guys. And then I log on and it's like, whoa, there are, you know, lots of people still doing this right now. Like, really cool. And what I think specifically, too, what I thought was really sick was, you know, outside of the academy, outside of, like, conventional literary publishing industry, it was like almost like indie rock for writing. And I was like, that is so sick. And I had never known that something like that could exist. You know, there's just this sort of thing doesn't exist in Nashville, at least it didn't at that time. But yeah, Austin Islam found me. He actually was a big help in putting me in touch with some people for Lo Siento. Justin Ryan Fife, I've followed him for years and years. He, to my mind, is sort of like quintessential, like his poetry is just sort of like incredible.
Yeah, he has me blocked.
What's that?
He has me blocked.
Does he?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so I come on to all these people, you know, and I'm like, wow, like another world is possible and exciting.
Do you know Paul Hanson Clark?
I've met Paul Hanson Clark before.
Oh, you have? Nice.
One time we met in Chicago briefly. We got, I don't remember what he got. I think he got like a cheeseburger and a milkshake. And we hung out for an afternoon. It was really nice. He was an interesting guy to talk to.
So wait,
I'm on his phone plan, actually.
Huh?
I'm on his phone plan.
You are?
Yeah.
Wait, how did that happen?
It's a long story, but I don't know. I needed to get off my mother's family plan. And anyway, it just so happened that, you know, I think Paul had said, hey, if you want to join my visible plan, you know, it's like $30 a month. And I was like, bet. It was right when I moved to Chicago and my mom was unable to get me like login information so I could, you know, just change my number over to this new carrier. So I ended up having to get like an all new cell phone number at like 28. So I'd had, you know, an American phone number since I was 18 that suddenly changed. It was an adventure, but yeah, I'm on anyway. I still pay the visible $30 a month.
I mean, you're meeting Paul and you don't know him and then he puts you on your phone plan. Do you think the alt-lit scene is more like a toned down version of your earlier life?
In some ways, it feels like that. I mean, it's hard to isolate it, you know what I mean? Because I was always interested in and engaged with somewhat, as much as you can be when you're just online outside of it, right? Like,
yeah.
I'd been engaged with that community virtually and been thinking about it and, you know, interested in it all throughout. It was sort of a through line. So, yeah, I don't even know. I know it's changed so much and undergone so much, you know.
What year was this when you met Paul?
I met Paul in 2022.
Okay, all right.
Maybe it was 23. I just moved to Chicago. I think I'd been here for like a month, and he asked me like where we should meet, and I was like, there's a fried chicken place. I kind of like, you know.
Did you meet anyone else?
No, not really.
Yeah, what about, did you meet Austin?
I've not met Austin before. We send each other voice memos.
He loves to send voice memos.
Yeah, he's a really solid dude. I'm interested in his journey with his faith and stuff. I find that very interesting.
Yeah?
And so we'll talk about that.
Are you a big religious guy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so.
Okay.
Especially, I had a pretty intense, experience in a storm like right before the pandemic I've described it as a near-death experience in the past, but I don't really think it was. I think it was just enough to really scare me. But yeah, I don't know. I think after that I became very grateful for life, you know, and I don't know if I would call it necessarily religious, but
there's a lot of parallel with that with the people in the alt-lit community. Like, at some point in time, a lot of the people that have stayed with it, at some point, they kind of have a, I don't know, like, not religious, but a spiritual experience where they maybe get into religion or maybe they don't, but they start being more grateful for life. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I don't know, because it's like that does seem to be a common thing, and I don't feel like I wouldn't be afraid to say that I am somewhat religious, because I'm would not be in the like evangelical, you know, weird way. But knowing that so many the online literary folks kind of know something close to what I'm talking about, like that
What
honestly
happened?
inspired, yeah.
What happened in the storm?
Yeah, the storm was really crazy. It came out of nowhere. Kind of somebody that was in the building like passed away while we were all there because of,
Wait, for real?
yeah, like debris, but like other stuff happened too. Like we were down underneath the tables and like the storm went right over us and like water was pouring in through like speakers and vents. We like stepped outside.
That's fucking scary.
Yeah, it was insane, but we stepped outside and like 10 feet away, there was a concrete like cinder block building that the storm had just completely cut in half, and you could like throw a rock inside it. And it was right, you know, like if two bodies had laid down, you know, they would have been able to touch.
Holy shit.
And so it was just like destruction. And anyway, we sat around waiting for the EMT to come. I don't want to get too into the details or anything, but
Is it bad?
it was pretty insane, man. I mean, it leveled a lot in Nashville. But the really crazy thing was like the ceiling caved in like 2 or 3 hours after we evacuated.
Holy fuck.
So it was just like this intense moment of like, am I going to be found dead drunk at this bar? You know, is this how I want to like be remembered? Is this really what I want to have like where I would have wanted it to have ended, you know? And then yeah, I felt like I got my life back a second time after that.
Yeah, I'd
And
be fucking religious too. Shit.
it was just sort of like a, you know, I get to choose how I wanna be. I get to be smarter about how I wanna live after that.
So when do you send the story to Jake Magazine?
Jake Mag, that's a funny one, man. So that one was in 2022, I think. You know, it was right after I'd sort of decided, okay, well, what do I want to do? I thought about going to grad school, and then some of my friends who had gone after we finished college were just starting to finish their PhDs then, and they weren't super stoked about the job market they were entering. So anyway, I ended up like kind of ruling out grad school, and I was like, well, maybe I just want to write.
Where would you have gone to grad school for and why?
Yeah, so I was pretty much a double major. I was like a physics class away from being a double major in philosophy and economics.
Wow.
I ended up getting an economics degree with like, yeah, one general education credit away from the philosophy piece. But I would have wanted to do something really interdisciplinary. It's sort of like an off the. So Johns Hopkins had a PhD in comparative literature, and I really would have enjoyed doing that. But then I also would have really enjoyed, I think, doing like economics at the New School in New York.
So
So
you never thought about going like MFA?
I think I considered it right around the same time, like 2020, 21. But no, it was not like a path that I necessarily saw myself taking. I would rather be reading more theory and like writing fiction than workshopping all the time, you
Yeah,
know?
that makes sense.
But yeah, the Jake story I sent when I decided, well, I can just write, you know, and not go to school. But, they published a very different version than I realized I had sent them, and I saw like on publication day that they had gotten like a different version. And
Did
anyway,
they edit it like differently?
no, I think I thought that I had sent them the most up to date sort of saved version,
Yeah.
and I hadn't. I'd sent them several drafts ago, but I talked with the editor. And he was like, well, it's been released, it's kind of out there, that's a story now, it belongs to everybody. And for a while that bugged me, because I think the final version at the time I liked it more. But anyway, I'm kind of stoked. I don't know, what'd you think about the story?
I didn't read it.
Oh, okay.
I skimmed it. Sorry.
That's all right.
I watched some of your videos on YouTube. You look like you're like directing mini blogs that like turn into a fiction story.
Oh yeah, that was something I did for a while.
But
Yeah.
those like hardcore, like you're like you must have sat down, wrote scripts out, and then filmed yourself. And like you're not using like iPhones, you're like using professional like cameras.
Oh, those. Yeah. Well, I was promoting or trying to the last Pineapple Tours record for that. And so yeah, it was something. I feel like do you remember like before the pandemic when Instagram would tell you you're all caught up?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I was like still interested in that kind of content until like it was just reels all the time, you know? So yeah, I did have fun doing the video stuff. I did video stuff here and there before that too. But yeah, that was something that I did for a little while.
Because a lot of it was like some about material substance.
Yeah, material substance. Well, I was reading Marx's Capital again at that time, and I was like thinking through, because I told you that sort of Pineapple Tours started as like this project while I was working in the factory, while I was reading Adorno and stuff. And for the last record, because I kind of knew that was going to be my last like Pineapple Tours thing, I was like, it'd be fun to just make this, you know, like similarly to the way I started it and get into that kind of thing. Yeah. So material.
So you seem like you read a lot of philosophy, and then are you like putting that into your fiction, and that's why you want to write fiction? Like why a novel? Why not short stories? Why not poetry? What like brings you to the novel format?
Yeah, the novel was something I think like I was motivated when I went to Texas. I always wanted to write a novel, but I write short stories too. I'm working on a collection next. I think that's what I want to do. I've been sitting on two or three right now that just polish up a little bit, and I think they're pretty ready to submit. I don't know. The thing about Lo Siento is it felt like the subject matter was, you know, following four or five character perspectives, and knew that if it was a longer work, it'd be sort of more space to sort of get philosophical with it, particularly because it was a Western. So yeah, that one felt right. And I do want to write another novel about like quantum computing or something.
Nice. Have you ever thought about writing essays about based off your life?
Yeah, I've done it. I've thought about it. I don't know. Essays, I don't know if I have anything interesting to say in an essay. You know?
Literally have lived the most interesting life probably of anyone on the podcast.
Thanks, man. No, I don't know. Yeah, I just feel like my thoughts are probably a dime a dozen, you know, and just like anybody else. I don't know why anybody would want to read just sort of like my unfiltered thoughts, you know what I mean?
Would you write about your experiences in life and then you put your thoughts through those experiences?
Yeah, I've done that a little bit on Substack before. Actually, it's funny you say that. Last night I was at a reading in Chicago, a release for a guy who kind of does memoir, fiction, and poetry, and just changes every project, so he's not always doing the same thing. And he had put out his first collection of poetry, and it's a really cool Chicago-based press, but I was like, man, it would be really cool, you know, as I work on this sort of bigger, fuller, like quantum computing Chicago novel, sort of like Lo Siento is like a Western Texas bar novel. To be like a Chicago, you know, engineering and technical. But in the interim, it'd be cool to just do like photos, sketches, and like thoughts from the train, maybe like over the course of a year, ride every different train line and think about things. And yeah, have that be sort of a fun little informal, you know what I mean? So I'm thinking about stuff like that.
What do you think of The Computer Room by Emma?
I really enjoyed it. So I think when I was a kid, I would grow up going to my dad's office on Saturdays, and I would play this video game. I don't remember what it was called, but it was, just being this cubicle, the lights were off, but I'd be jumping this pink pony from lipstick to lipstick. Does that ring the bell for you at all?
No.
It was on Cartoon Network. I don't remember what it was. Anyway.
What did the horse look like? Was it fat?
Was it fat?
Was it like a fat horse?
Yeah, that might be it. Let's see. I'll have to find it. A cowboy's head would chase you around. So The Computer Room reminded me so viscerally of that, particularly the first, I think the second story. Here, I have it. She sent me Cave Girl while she was writing it, and I got to put a little bit of my thoughts into like a Google Doc. I don't know if she ended up using any of it. But I really enjoyed all of them. I think it was the computer room itself, the story of the computer room, that reminded me the most of that feeling. But yeah, I thought it was really well done. I loved the Sims stuff. Babyland is one of my favorite short stories I've read in like the last several years. How to Water the Plants like struck me in a really particular way. I think what was really interesting to me about the book, though, is that like as the book progresses, you very much get the sense that like the narrator is sort of aging, or there are different things that the narrator takes from the story that's being told. You know, like it's like the reflection grows with each successive chapter. And I don't know if that was on purpose or if that's just the way I read it, but resonated with me. Well, yeah, because like one of the last stories is Cave Girl, where everything's sort of, that's the last story and everything's over. Mm-hmm. You know, Prayer Breakfast is a very like kind of dark story about right before things end. So yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed the book a lot.
You should interview her.
What's that?
You should interview her about the stories.
Uh-huh.
If she'll go for it, I don't know if she'll go for it.
Yeah, it could be cool. Well, I'm excited to read with her and Clint in Asheville. Yeah, I don't know. I like her.
Have you been to Asheville before?
I've never been to Asheville. It's always on the list, but I'm excited to go see it.
Are you going to play any music?
I probably won't play any music in Asheville.
You should. You should bring your guitar.
That'd be fun. I don't know if it's that kind of trip.
It's a very music place.
I believe it. Yeah, I mean, it seems to me kind of very similar to Nashville without the like LA-ification that sort of happened in Nashville. But I've never been, so I don't know.
Wait, Nashville has an LA-ification?
It's been, yeah, sort of like LA-ified, like very Instagram-driven.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a big reason why I left. Just the high rises, tall and skinny, his Instagram murals everywhere.
Do you think Paul Hanson Clark could have like a parrot like on his shoulder?
I could see that. Mm-hmm. I'd dig it, yeah. That would be cool.
Have you ever had a parrot? Other than the parrot that guy had?
Have I ever had a parrot?
Yeah.
I have not had a parrot, no.
Did you want to kill the parrot?
Yeah, well, it was a parakeet. It was this little
parakeet. Sorry.
I couldn't stand it. No, when I was a kid, I wanted a parrot. I always thought it'd be cool to have one. But yeah, the parakeet, man, that thing sucked. It was so loud.
Have you been in any fights?
I have managed to not get into any fights.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Any beefs in the rock world?
In the rock world? No, I don't think so, man.
Have you had any beefs whatsoever with anyone?
I think, yeah, I mean, there are probably people who don't like me, you know. I know for a fact that there is at least one person who has me blocked on Twitter. You
who?
Know? I don't
know. In the alt-lit world?
Potentially. But, yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to guess when we turn off the recording.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I try as a general rule to not get into beefs, but
there's
know
some that, people that just like they hate people that are nice.
Maybe
if
yeah.
If you get along with everyone, they'll hate you.
Maybe yeah.
Talk
that
shit about
or,
you.
I know too that I can be a bit much sometimes. I don't know.
Like, what do you mean a bit much?
I don't know. I try to be pretty like.
You're very outgoing.
Oh, thanks, man. I try to be like a very like happy-go-lucky. Everything's always kind of a joke, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe sometimes I can spread it on thick. I'm also like kind of a southerner, you know, so I probably got a big, you know,
don't hate yourself for that though. That's, I mean, you're very likable. You're an extrovert kind of, but
yeah. But yeah, anyway, I try not to have beefs. I try to, yeah, it's something I try to avoid if I can.
So we've been going about an hour.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think it's good. Do you want to talk anything about your book? Any characters?
Yeah, maybe.
The bridge.
The bridge. Yeah, the bridge is one of my favorite parts.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge is it's like this stakeout scene. So there are two main characters. There's a sheriff and a reverend, and the reverend is sort of this existentially fraught, anxious guy, and the sheriff's sort of like past his prime. He's always drinking, always smoking cigarettes, and you know, like very well intentioned, but can't do his job. And so they're in this stakeout right outside the bridge with, like, you know, big Burger King bags that they're eating, and the sheriff's drinking and smoking in the cruiser. And they think that they've got this guy pinned down into this, it's called the bridge, it's just a concrete tunnel, based on something I drove past in, like, San Antonio area one time. And anyway, one of my all-time favorite moments in the book is not only sort of that moment where they're just, you know, sort of contemplating this bridge, but the sheriff Duke goes into the bridge and he starts to contemplate the form, like it doesn't seem to belong to the space around it, you know, there it serves no real purpose, and yet how can this hole or this this space in the middle of the air constitute sort of the basis of its own existence. And so he's waxing poetic, this, you know, drunk sheriff smoking a cigarette. And anyway, then he has to get back in action, you know, like he hears a twig snap or something and they're back on it. But yeah, I don't know. I think the book to me is sort of a vehicle for these characters who are caught up in these contemplative moments. And the bridge in particular is one of my favorite parts.
When you're plotting the book out, do you like put up pages on your wall? Because I know some people do that.
I do, yeah. And sometimes if I'm reading something very difficult, I'll do that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was writing this, I did a lot of different things, like how do I keep up with each of the characters' narratives and make sure that they're interweaving correctly and that everything sort of resolves neatly.
How did you do that?
I did a lot of things. I think what I ended up doing when it really started to solidify was I would copy scenes that involved every narrator and just have like a, you know, sheriff word doc and like a reverend word doc and a bartender word doc and a jewel thief word doc and make sure that in a magician word doc, you know, make sure that they all seemed internally consistent and then kind of interweave them and bring in forms of the flashbacks and stuff. But yeah, so I guess this one in particular, I did like a virtual version of the pages.
Did you ever look up like on YouTube, like how to build a novel or anything? Or did you just go and do it?
I think I pretty much just did it.
I think that's the best way to go about it instead of looking at these, like, how to write a novel, whatever.
Thanks, man. Well, it's like so much of the fun and the challenge and the learning how to do it isn't doing it, you know? It's like building a muscle for the first time, yeah. It was so much fun. I enjoyed writing it as much as I, you know, enjoy having the finished product.
Was there any point that you felt like it wasn't going to happen or be?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like when?
Well, specifically, I'd say when I moved to Chicago, because I moved here to like be involved in a literary community that I didn't have previously. And I showed up and, you know, I'd put out a story, that Jake story. I'd put out a story while in my first year here with Zero Readers. I like that story a lot. But like I didn't really have like a big body of work, and I had this novel that I was working on. But yeah, at that point, you know, being a new guy in a literary community, and it's like, yeah, I've got a novel that isn't finished yet. Then like I knew just enough people here to like meet more people who might help me, and it ended up doing it, right? But like until I got there, I definitely had lots and lots of doubts.
Have you ever talked to Sebastian? Cause he's like a philosophy guy too, kind of.
Castillo?
Yeah.
I took, you know, he does his reading clubs, and I signed up for one last year where he did Spinoza.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of fun because a lot of the philosophers that I like were profoundly influenced by Spinoza. I learned a lot.
Can you break down, like, what happens, like, when you go in? Is everyone talking about what they read?
Yeah, I mean, I only did the one, so I can only speak to that. Everybody is sort of bringing what they thought, you know, there was some piece of, you know, what was being said in this week's reading. There's some piece of how does this fit, some piece of like, is there, you know, any contradictions in the text, which of course there always are. I tend to try and, so my sort of the way that I read things is philosophy is very similar to fiction. It all comes through the form of language and it's all stuff that somebody thought up, you know. So I always try to read even the driest philosophical text as sort of a literary text. And so I try to bring some of that perspective. We interestingly had some people who specialized in, I don't know if there was a Spinoza specialist, but there were like some ancient specialists who could come in and enlighten the conversation. I've read a lot of Aristotle, so I was able to kind of flesh out how he differs from Aristotle. But yeah, it was about a year ago, so it's not top of dome, but that's about how they went.
Did you ever write your own philosophy thing?
I thought I could when I was younger, but I'd rather just live
it in fiction.
Yeah, I'd rather just do it in fiction.
Did you ever read Wittgenstein?
I have, but not in a serious way. Everybody that I'm friends with who reads philosophy loves him. I know that I would love him. I just, one of those I haven't spent serious time with.
I think I bought the book and then I opened it up and I'm like, I'm not doing this. Did you ever read David Foster Wallace?
I tried Broom of the System and it never took for me, so I gave up after about 50 pages.
Yeah, I don't think you should base him off that book.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I've not read anything else, though.
How do you get to that book? That's like one of his like earlier ones that he's less known for.
My last roommate in Nashville told me that I would really like that one, but I was also very interested in the idea of a caged bird accidentally becoming a cult religious leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that sounds like something I should get into.
What do you think about Infinite Jest? Would you try that?
I would probably try it. Yeah, I don't have any reason not to. I love Thomas Pynchon, for example. You know what I mean? So I feel like it's in a similar kind of vein. Like, I won't shy away from the dude philosophy or the dude texts. You know what I mean? That doesn't bother me necessarily. And I'm not scared of length because I've read all these, you know, like Brothers Karamazov.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever start your own book club?
I used to kind of have one here, and we are on hiatus right now just as we all kind of finish up some particularly busy chapters of our own lives. But yeah, I think the last book we read was Sontag's On Photography. We had read...
That's good.
That's a really good one. We'd read previously, we did Don Quixote and Kierkegaard's Either Or at the same time, and that was a really rewarding...
You read two big books at the same time?
Yeah, and before that, we read Dostoevsky's... I actually have a Substack essay about this, so I do some essaying. But and then we'd read Karamazov, and I think it was a different Kierkegaard once. And then we read Proust, Swan's Way, with the French existentialist philosopher Merleau-Ponty. So we're trying to do stuff like that, but... Obviously, doing multiple books at the same time can be a little bit, I think, limiting for getting other people involved.
I do like that, though, because it opens up the conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, totally. And I like reading different forms of, you know what I mean? Because
you
see how they engage with one another. This was an interesting one. I read, this one is on my own, Aristotle's De Anima, which is on the soul, with Flannery O'Connor's Wise Blood, I think. And that one was particularly fascinating because it was like a 21st century work paired with like a, whatever, 280 BC, whenever it was, work. And there were still so many converging themes. So I'm into stuff like that.
Do you try to reach a page count every day?
I used to. I don't think there's any way that I can realistically do that now.
Okay. Like, what was the page count?
So when we do the book club again, I will probably be holding myself to a page count, you know, just so when we meet, we've all read the same. But I think like anywhere from 25 pages to 50 pages. I'm not one of those like 100 page animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are just machines and can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, on a good day, I'll read like 20 to 30 pages maybe.
Is it easier to read philosophy or fiction, or is it pretty much just as difficult?
I think it can be a challenge.
When you're starting out, you probably enjoy it, so you probably go through it pretty...
Yeah, I mean, philosophy, you know, you open up a book of bad fiction, and, like, that's really hard.
Yeah, that is. That's very hard.
But, like, yeah, I think good fiction flows so much more naturally, and it's, like, buttery, you know, almost, good fiction. But, like, philosophy, I feel like particularly... I have this thought that, like, philosophy... In writing, like the text, the practices which the text makes you take on often mirror the concepts that, you know, the writer is writing about. So Aristotle writing about patience, for example, Like you have to sort of build patience by practicing it as you read it. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really rewarding way. When I could trick my mind into thinking that way about some of the drier, more old stuff, that became a lot more not entertaining, but like fun and rewarding. You know, it's just like a different sort of discipline of reading than I would feel than when I opened, Flannery O'Connor or whatever.
So is the book club in person or online?
We have three people right now, very small book club. We're thinking about adding a fourth. Two of us live here. One friend lives in Vermont. He's thinking about maybe moving to Chicago eventually. But yeah, for purposes of meeting and stuff, we do Google Meets.
You do Google Meets?
Yep.
Oh, cool. Is that like, do you put it out there on the internet for people to come join, or is it just you guys?
It's just us right now. I mean, I think we're interested in getting other people on board, and we know that we've got to make it as welcoming as possible, right? And I know that doing the pairing, that's why we just read Susan Sontag's On Photography last time, just get it down to one. But I think we need to make sure that we feel really good about sort of how we're approaching people. And then too, I think we want to make sure that anybody who does is really interested and committed and open to the challenge of, like, because we're thinking about it as like a replacement for grad school. You know, neither of us got to do that. And
now that you have like a fiction book, you can like ask people to pay, you know?
That's true. I guess I could. Yeah, I guess.
Have you thought about asking Sebastian to join it?
I'd be interested. Yeah, I don't know. I know
we're making episodes or recording them.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that. I know he's much more established. I don't know if he would have time to do it with me, you know. But yeah, I'd be super interested in whatever you had to say. If you wanted to come along for the ride, would be very down.
Would you ever do like alt-lit books? No.
Yeah, no, sorry. It took me a second to.
I saw your face, like, no way.
No. No, I'd be super down to. Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, alt-lit accesses all kinds of stuff, you know, really good alt-lit that you don't find in any other home. So, yeah, I think absolutely I'd be down for that.
Like what? What book?
I just read Graham Irvin's Livermush. I haven't read that one yet. I read I Have a Gun, and that was incredible. Like, it was one of my favorite things that I've read in several years.
Why?
I think, you know, for one thing, the subject matter was so like prescient, but on top of that, like, it just kept evolving. Like, I went into it thinking what kind of book it was going to be. And, you know, for the first couple of pages, you know, I was like, oh, it's a book of poems about, but then like it finds slips in itself for ways that it can like open up, you know, the window and evolve, and it keeps changing itself and pulling itself through itself. I'm really excited. I get to read with Graham in Philly, and he's actually going to come here to Chicago to read at our Chili Cook-Off event. And so I read that book in preparation, but like as I was reading, and I was like, oh, hell yeah, this is awesome. So that one was really cool. I'd be down to read something like that. I'd be down to read The Computer Room. You know what I mean?
Do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Another book.
Totally. If it's right, it's right, you know.